This podcast is sponsored by El Spilio. Go to elspilio.com if you want the last primary light you will ever have to buy. They are fantastic. I've got the Terra, but maybe you prefer the Rescue SAR or the Lunatic. Elspilio.com to check them all out. They're all fantastic. And if you buy any light from elspilio.com and enter the promo code podcast, you'll save $20 off your order there at checkout. Go to elspilio.com, promo code podcast for the best light you will ever own, and maybe the last primary light you'll ever need. elspilio.com, promo code podcast. And that goes for any order over $300, any order of regularly priced items over $300. They sell more than lights, but the lights, I mean, that's why you're going to elspilio.com, isn't it? Go and get a great light at elspilio.com and treat yourself as we head into the holiday season. Elspilio.com, promo code podcast. This is the Caving Podcast. I'm Matt Pelser, your host. I'm with the Central Indiana Grotto, and this is a podcast about caving, cave exploration, recreational caving. And if you want to get involved with that, you can find your local grotto. A grotto is like a local club, a local chapter of the National Speleological Society, and you can find your local grotto. They've got some great interactive tools at caves.org, which is the NSS website. That's pretty easy to remember, isn't it? Caves.org. You can find your local grotto. You can then get in touch with the leadership and find the people in that grotto who like to take new people caving. I'm one of those people in the CIG. There are also other people in the CIG, my grotto, who like to do that. And so your local grotto has those people too. So go to caves.org, find your local grotto, and do it right. Caving can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, as you will find out in today's episode. We talk about one particular rescue of some inexperienced people who did not have a great time. So go to caves.org, find your grotto, and do it the right way. If you are a non-caver and you are here, you are more than welcome. Thank you for listening. But make sure that you don't screw it up. All right. I've got quite a few episodes banked up, including my January 2021 episode, my 2020 send-off. I mean, we all want to forget this year. This year sucked. But I am telling you that I am kicking off the next year in a great, great way. And I was going to wait until December to tell you that. I'm not going to tell you who it is. I don't even know if I'm going to tell you who it is next month. But 2021 is going to kick off with a bang for sure on the Caving Podcast. I've already done the interview. It went really well. So I can't wait for you to hear it. No caving this past month, but I'm hoping to do a big trip in a month or so. You know, with COVID and everything, it's hard to get out. And with toddlers, it's hard to get out of the house. But I'm really kind of hoping I can get a big trip in. Also hoping I can get a big backpacking trip in over the next month. There have been some developments with my professional life that might allow me to get a little time off here before too long. And so we'll see. We'll see how that goes. And if it does, I'll report on it next month. Not that you care, but it's nice to talk about. The Caving Podcast is now on Spotify, by the way. I mentioned that last month. A very big thanks to Ian Chechet. Is that how you, he never wrote back. So it's all good though, man. I really appreciate the suggestion to go to Spotify. Since I put the podcast on Spotify, I've already gotten a couple emails from people who only listen to podcasts on Spotify, who love it. So I'm glad that I'm on Spotify now. And hello to you if you emailed me, and I really appreciate it. I try to return most of the emails that I get. Anyway, this month's guest is Danielle Green. She's not really a project caver, but she is a pretty prolific caver in Indiana. She's one of the co-chairs of the Bloomington, Indiana Grotto, which is full of a lot of serious cavers, including this year's September guest, Sam Freshour, who has been caving in Indiana for a long, long time. He drew the map for Sullivan, one of my favorite caves, the very first cave I ever did. He literally wrote the book on Indiana caves that came out in, like, I think 2012, 2013. But anyway, Danielle Green, along with Laura Demarest, who's also been interviewed on this podcast, is one of the co-chairs of the BIG. And she's got a lot of cool stuff to talk about. I mean, we just nerded out about a lot of Indiana caves. Oh, and we refer to a guy named Tim a few times. Tim is Danielle's partner. They live together, and he's also a caver. He's been all over, and so that's who we're talking about, Tim Lawn. Oh, and by the way, if you are part of a grotto, and if you're maybe someone in charge of presentations, or if you know the person in charge of presentations for grotto meetings, let me know. I've now given the Caving Podcast Grotto presentation to two grottos, and they've been a lot of fun, the Nashville Grotto and then the West Virginia University Grotto, Student Grotto. And I would love to do it for your grotto if you're interested. Just hit me up. Find me in the directory, and we'll knock it out. Oh, there's a supporter of this podcast who likes it when I mention Karst Conservancies and different projects going on with Karst Conservancies. And last month, I talked a little bit about the Shawnee Karst Preserve expansion owned by the Indiana Karst Conservancy. And by the way, Danielle Green is one of the directors of the Indiana Karst Conservancy. And so here's your tie-in. So the Shawnee Karst Preserve expansion that I talked about last month is a 17.5-acre tract. That's the expansion. I think I had it switched last month. The old preserve was 50 acres. The new expansion is 17 acres. It's not quite paid for. If you want to donate, you can go to ikc.org and make a donation that way or become a member of the Indiana Karst Conservancy. Again, Shawnee Karst Preserve, which is really, really close to Spring Mill State Park, and it contains one of the entrances to Upper Twin Cave, which is a really significant habitat for the Hoosier cavefish, which is a lot like the northern cavefish, but there's a couple differences. They've got their own species, the Hoosier cavefish. We're very proud of it. So you can go to ikc.caves.org. Anyway, I'll put the link in the description of this podcast, and you can make a donation there for the Shawnee Karst Preserve expansion. And a big thanks if you're able to do that. So Danielle Green, yeah, she is just a caver. I mean, but she is a serious caver, and she's been all over, and she likes to take new people. She just got the bug. She doesn't do survey or anything like that, but she is one heck of a caver, and I've always wanted to talk to her. She's always like this sort of bright presence whenever we're, you know, doing like caving events and things like that. Like anytime you get a chance to talk to Danielle, you'll walk away happy to be a caver, because she's just got that infectious, I don't know, personality. And was wonderful to talk to in this podcast. And if you ever get to meet her, she'll be wonderful to talk to in person. So I'm really glad that I got to talk to Danielle. Here she is from the Bloomington, Indiana Grotto, Danielle Green. Danielle Green, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and inviting me.
Sure. You've been on my list for a while, actually, among Indiana cavers, and you're one of the directors of the IKC. How many are there? There's a lot.
There's a lot. There's, I think, 12 directors at this moment and 3 executive board members. So there's 15 altogether.
What goes into that?
You know, it's a lot of emails. We only meet quarterly, so 4 times a year for a few hours, and we usually pack something fun into that also, like a work day or a cave trip. But a lot of work gets done via email.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah, what? I'm on email all day, so nothing to me.
How would you, I don't know, you don't need to divulge too much, but I don't know, how would you describe the health of the Indiana Karst Conservancy? I know that the model that they work under is, you know, it's a little different from some of the other big ones.
Yeah, so the health of it is great. Yeah. We are going strong. We just, you know, had a property purchase out at Lowry Cave last year. We had the addition to Wayne Preserve the year or so before that. So we're constantly looking for new opportunities to purchase and save. So it's going strong. It's going strong. We have a great base of donors, and we are always looking for more.
Sure. Sure. I've been saying I'm going to add my name to that list here soon, but I just haven't done it, because you guys are, if I'm not mistaken, you guys are old school. You guys are, hey, if you want to donate, put a check in the mail. Right? You don't have like a PayPal button on the website, or maybe you do. I don't know.
You know, as luck would have it, we have entered the era of technology, and we do have now a button you can press on our website to donate and to join. And it's only $15. You can do that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Are you a surveyor? Like, do you Project Cave and stuff?
I laugh because everybody listening to this will be like, nope, no, she doesn't. I really, 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 really like the dry and regular mud stuff. So sitting, laying in a stream passage for long lengths of time, I usually end up extremely hypothermic no matter what I wear.
Well, but you know, I mean, you're still extremely involved. You're on the leadership of the IKC. You're a co-chair of the Bloomington, Indiana Grotto, right?
Yes. Laura Demarest and I joined forces in 2019. So this is our second year co-chairing the BIG. And I would rather have no one else by my side at that because we complement each other so well.
Yeah, in what ways? I mean, because she's definitely a project caver. I don't know what she's been up to lately, but, you know, she was heavily involved in the Binkley project.
Oh, yeah. So she is the energetic, go out there and talk to anyone face. And I am the quiet behind the scenes, getting stuff done on email and Facebook and website. So it's a great blend.
And so I don't know, how is the health of the BIG right now? Do you still have a pretty good contingent of people who show up regularly to meetings? I mean, not now, but virtually, I guess.
I was going to say pre-COVID, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
We've grown our membership. We've probably doubled or tripled it, people that come to the meetings. And then, of course, COVID. But we have a growing Facebook page. And once this all settles down, I think we'll have, you know, equally as high numbers of people coming back to the meetings. We met a few times on Zoom, and then we ended up meeting out at the Buckner property so we could be outdoors and be physically distant and wear masks if we were, you know, too close to each other. So we've, knock on wood, we've had great weather for the last few meetings out there.
And you guys do some really cool stuff with those meetings, the post-COVID kind of in-person, socially distant meetings. I've wanted to come down for one of those or a couple of those now because Sam, who I talked to a couple months ago, he'll lead walks around the property. There's a cool trail that goes through and it goes by a lot of features. And he'll tell you everything about each one. Because he was there. He was the man.
He was there when they were formed. I'm kidding, Sam. No, the man knows everything. It's amazing.
He was so much fun to talk to. So the IKC is separate from the Richard Blends Nature Conservancy, but you're all kind of on, you know, in the same circles.
Right.
How close are you to the RBNC?
I was on the board until this year. Tim and I were on the board for 1 year. And it was during the time that Patty Cummings was really spearheading getting the house ready for a new caretaker. So we jumped in on that to help out. And now there's somebody there. So it was great. Basically, our jobs are to protect Cave and Karst. So that overlaps really well.
And there's a cool partnership kind of, I mean, as I understand it, but correct me if I'm wrong about any of it, but there's a kind of a cool partnership between the IKC and the RBNC because you're kind of buying up property that inches closer and closer and closer on the Wayne property to the RBNC property. I mean, are there kind of pie in the sky or maybe even realistic plans to close that gap between the two properties over the ridge?
You know, if we had a really great zip line, we could make that happen. But it's only like one tract of land away now. But yeah, you know, eventually it would be great if we could do that. And if the opportunity arose, I'm sure we would jump in on that.
So you're the property manager of Wayne Cave, and they just, as you said, expanded. Are they looking to expand it again? Did I see that email or was I misinterpreting the email that I just got the other day?
No. Oh, so that is another property that down by Shawnee Karst Preserve.
Oh, that's right.
That was the newest expansion.
Okay, gotcha.
And that literally just happened within the last month or two. So, and my time nowadays is irrelevant. I have no concept of time.
It has no meaning whatsoever. So the expansion of the Wayne Cave property, I don't know. I was intrigued by that when they announced that. Because, I mean, you know, that's an area where there's just stuff everywhere. There's little holes here and there. Most of them have a name. Most of them are, like, known. But I don't know. Do you think that there's – I know you're not a project caver necessarily, but do you think there's any potential with any of that stuff on the new Wayne Cave property?
On the new – section of the property, nothing that we have seen yet. There's one pit that looks a little precarious. It looks really nice, and I know a couple people have ventured down into it, but quickly came back up and said, yeah, that's going to need some work. I haven't been in there to see it yet, but you know, there is potential. If we got some really good gully washers and that opened up a bit more, there's potential.
What about the management effort? Because, I mean, so much of that area down there in Bloomington is, you know, it's wooded. And there's also invasive species you guys are trying to clean up. How big of an effort is that?
Well, let me tell you.
Tell me.
I've been working on that. We received a grant 2 years ago from NCRS. I always get that backwards. but we have a 3-year grant. So we broke out the Wayne Cave property into 3 tracks to make it more manageable to work because there was so many invasive species there. So the first grant we got was for the most northern tract. We're on year 2 of that. We just had our inspection last week, actually, and passed with flying colors on the work that was done and removing the invasive species on that first tract. We received in July a new grant for the most southern tract, which includes the newest acquisition a few years ago. There's one section in there that is just the most daunting autumn olive you've ever seen. But a big chunk of that's not too bad. So we are definitely going to need some help. So Chris Sewell and Gonia Scully and I went to the southern tract last week, and I unfortunately decided to step on a yellow jacket nest while we were walking through there.
Oh.
And besides being covered in hundreds of larval stage ticks and then being stung and having no cell reception, and my lips started to feel a little weird. Bless Godie, but she ran to the car and got my Benadryl, and I said, forget this, I'm gonna come back when the weather's cooler.
Oh. So,
my knee still itches. It still itches from all the stings.
Good heavens. That's rough. It seems like work days kind of come and go in COVID land. I'm sure there's other factors at play, but I'd love to make it down for one of those.
Yeah.
How much help do you usually get?
We usually get between 3, and on a big work day, we'll get sometimes up to 10 people. Last year, we had some really big work days. Keith Dunlap goes down solo, and just, you know, I'll go down after him and look around, and there's 50 autumn olives chainsawed down. I'm like, dang, Keith, good job.
He's the man.
He is the man. He's had some help. Jerry Lewis came out and they tackled a big section of autumn olive in the area that I got stung. So I'm really glad that they didn't hit that also. So
let's talk about the actual cave that's on that property, the main cave, Wayne Cave. What was your first experience of Wayne Cave?
You would have to ask that.
Well, I just got it. It's part of the job.
So my first experience in that was a horrific panic attack 30 feet in the crawlway and a quick exit. That was my first experience.
Let's just fill people in on if they're not familiar with Wayne. Wayne Cave is a 4.25 mile cave in a very significant karst region down the Garrison Chapel Valley, and it's sort of infamous for its quarter mile belly crawl. That's like the only way in or out. And
right.
Yeah. And so you were 30 feet in and things went south.
I was 30 feet in and our lovely trip leader, Bill Bow, said, "It only gets worse from here." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Why is everybody so close to me? Get away, like scoot apart. And then I couldn't breathe. But a year or two later, I'm like, "God, I got to go back in there. What's wrong with me?" I had some more caving under my belt. And I discovered that I really actually love tight passages, not stream, but tight, dry.
did you make it through the crawlway on that trip, or did you have to call it? Were you backing out?
Oh, it was literally 30 feet in the crawlway, and I backed out. Okay. I made everybody behind me like beep, move it on. I'm coming out.
And so when you went back, you pushed through.
Oh yeah, I was like, "What? I was afraid of this? Are you kidding me?" Yeah.
What had you done like between that first trip and this one that kind of, I don't know, warmed you up for it?
You name it. That was probably my prime cave years. Went to TAG quite a bit, learned vertical, just discovered that I really do like the tight, dry stuff. Leading trips in Sullivan Cave, there's one little side passage that you can go to the mountain room, not the typical way, but there's a tight way. And I freaked out at that one too. We saw a really, really nice flashlight down at the bottom of the the little climb down. I'm like, I want to get that flashlight. and I'm like, "Nah, I can't do it." And then I went back and the flashlight was gone. I'm like, "Okay, somebody went down there." So I went. And I'm like, this is great. I really, really like this. So now I take every scout trip or youth group, whatever, I give the option of going the hard way. And I take a group that wants to go that way. And they're all victorious when they come through the top.
I got to find that. I'm actually going to go to Sullivan this weekend. And I don't know if the group that I'm with will want to do that. But I've actually never been that way.
Ooh.
How do you do
it? It is, your femur bones might be a bit long.
Yeah,
for
probably
it,
but, so. I'm like 6'2". It's probably not going to work out for me.
There's a little bending that has to occur, but you don't know. You can give it a look. Send somebody down smaller than you and see what they think.
So you're the manager of the Wayne Cave property. Have you been, I don't want to say everywhere in that cave, because there are some places that aren't really worth going to, but where have you been in Wayne Cave?
Oh, shockingly, not that many places, you would ask. I can't even think of the name of it. I'm going to need a map. But the candle, whatever.
Oh, yeah, RPI.
The RPI, thank you. The RPI, back to camp 3, but not beyond. And I really want to go to the lake passage because I know they've been looking at that as a possible connection area with Studebaker Pit.
Yeah.
And I just want to see what it looks like. Haven't been there.
It's so intriguing what they're doing there.
Yeah.
It's some heavy stuff. But I mean, you said you didn't like wet stuff. I don't know. Are you really wanting to go back there?
Yeah, just to see it once.
Okay. You can do it once. What about Buckner? How much experience do you have there? Probably quite a bit.
A lot. Not as much as Anmar, Jess, and Leanne, who I think go every Monday. But I've probably led, I don't know, 50 or 60 or so trips there over the course of the last 13 years.
I mean, whenever I go, I'm usually taking someone new, so I feel obligated to take the circle route.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's nice. It's cool. It's got a little bit of everything. It's got some tight spots. It's got a little bit of climbing. It's got some scrambles, you know, all kinds of stuff. But I don't know, if you were going to take a Buckner trip and go where you wanted to go, what would that mm-hmm. look like?
That would consist of BS South.
Ooh.
So in the waterfall passage, I actually, BS South is probably one of my favorite places in there. Dave Everton took us back there. It's the first time I'd been there years ago. And I just remember kind of popping into this shimmering room. It was all glittery and, you know, diamonds are a girl's best friend, right? But it looked like a room full of diamonds. It was really cool.
Was it pretty far back there? Where is that?
It is, if you're heading towards the waterfall passage, you'll actually stay up instead of going down into the waterfall passage, and it veers off to the left. It kind of parallels it above for a little while, and then it veers off to the left.
So it's pretty close to that kind of area where the waterfall passage goes down.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So you don't have to go too far to find it.
Nope, not too bad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So BS South, you been to the end of it?
I think the end. The end that we saw anyway.
Which is that, it's got that, there's like a column back there, right? There's some flowstone and stuff.
You know, I was just enamored by the glittery condensation in that one room. And I don't exactly remember. And I tried to find it again. And for some reason, we couldn't find it.
Isn't that annoying? I hate that.
Yes. Totally annoying. I'm like, that's it. I've got to go back. And then, like you just said, you take newbies and everybody, you know, gets the circle route trip.
Yeah.
I really do actually like the, oh gosh, what is the name of the passage that goes underneath?
Underneath which area?
If you're on the circle route, you go to the tea room, you go left. Oh, Gurgling Springs.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. I was just about to ask that because you're kind of small. Can you make that like 10, 8, 9, 10 inch crawl at the very end where it connects?
Yes. With my helmet off. Yep. I really like that one too.
Last time I went there, not the last time, but a couple times ago, I went with a few people and we were going to do like a tight spaces photo trip. And that was on the list. And I had been down through Gurgle Spring, but I hadn't gone all the way through. And I knew that got tight there in the back. And I looked at it and the other guy I was with looked at it and we're just like, I don't think we can fit.
It's a tight one. Once you turn your head one direction, you're committing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'd be really hard to back out of that.
I took a group. I think there were three or four IU students, and we all made it through. One guy had to back up and, you know, try again, back up, try again. And finally, he just angled his head just right and popped through and he was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I just did that.
See, I wanted that feeling. I wanted that feeling of triumph.
I'll take you there, man.
Okay, maybe we'll have to set that up. What about those low crawls that connect Keen's Grotto to the Air Force Room? I've tried to do those, too, and have noped out every time.
Oh, yeah. Those, I don't think, are quite as tight as that last Gurgling Springs section. Okay. But that's a lot of fun too. What I found anyway, you have to know where you're going or the wrong spot.
That was part of the problem when we went there last too, is we couldn't even find it. And then when we finally did, we were like, we're exhausted. We did like a merry-go-round in those little tight crawls around that area and we couldn't, because it's easy to miss.
Super easy to miss. I think Tim knew where it was. And I don't know if he was just letting me poke around and have fun, but I'm like, okay, dude, you got to tell me, is this the right way?
Yeah, because once you make that circle, I mean, and I'm sure there's several circles in that series of tight, tight crawls around there. But once you come back to where you've been before, you don't want to do it again.
I know.
It's like, don't mess with me, man. So when did you get into caving? When was the moment?
I think the moment was when I was three or four and the meager family vacations that we had were fantastic. You know, you hear people going to other countries now, but we went to Blue Springs and Marengo and Squire Boone.
All Indiana show caves,
yep. And down to Mammoth and all the caves down around there. It's funny, my dad hates caving. Like, they can't stand the thought that I go caving, but that's where they took us on our family vacations. Like, this is your fault.
When was the first, like, real wild or wildish trip?
I think my very first wild trip would be the wild cave tour at Mammoth. I mean, even though it was led, you know, it was the quote unquote wild tour. And then my first cave after that, or the next cave after that, was Buckner. And that, using the correct vernacular, I was a spelunker at that time.
In what way were you sort of unprepared? And
I'm embarrassed to say this, but I think we all started this way, right? I didn't have a helmet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had like a 400-pound Maglite. Like, why am I carrying this? Maybe one backup light. You know, now it's ridiculous what I pack into my cave pack. But at that time, you know, we just didn't know any better. We didn't know any better.
Well, there was a lot of that going on in Buckner at that time, probably, too.
Yeah.
Did you go to IU?
I did.
So you kind of got hooked up with some of those folks who were spelunkers, and Buckner was the spot.
Buckner was a spot. And ironically enough, I did not know there was a caving club in all my 4 years at IU until, yeah. So had I known there was a caving club, then I would have had a helmet and a proper light and everything. But no, I just hung out with friends that lived in the area and, sure, you know, hey, let's go here. Hey, let me show you something. You like caving? Let's go here. And then I was the one they pushed forward because they were too afraid to go check out the small areas.
I'm always intrigued by that sort of sordid time in Buckner's history when there was so much of that going on. Just IU students, you know, heading west to the Garrison Chapel Valley and just screwing around, mostly in Buckner. From your experience, what did that look like at that time? I like collecting these kinds of stories as well.
It was very early in my going. Buckner was kind of the place we went. And if the group I went with had permission at that time, I don't know. They all were leading the trips, and I just came along for the ride. But I do remember a lot of glass and beer cans. And of course, you don't see it now, but the amount of graffiti at that time was just unbelievable. I mean, even then, before I knew better, I was like, God, this is bad. This is really bad. Yeah. Somebody drug a mattress down into one of the crawlways.
I heard about the mattress. How do you do that?
I don't know.
How do you get it past the crawl, the entrance to the crawl?
That is the $1 million question.
Was it like a little twin mattress?
I didn't get close enough to.
I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to.
You know, that was, it was like, dang, who's living down here? Let's get out of here fast.
Oh, that's so messed up. But now, I mean, like when you think about that time versus now and how much it's been cleaned up, I mean, you could still go there and easily find graffiti and to a degree some trash, but how does it compare now?
Oh man, maybe a tenth of what I remember seeing.
Did you ever participate in any of the cleanup back in the mid-2000s, the big significant cleanup?
Yeah, right around 2009 or 10 or so. No, maybe it was 2007. Anyway, the big graffiti cleanup that Bill Bouse, and I don't want to leave anybody else out, but I know a large number of people were involved in getting the sandblasting equipment. With the time I joined, we were in the volcano room at that point. And they had already cleaned off the LV Cushing room. So that part was done. So I just joined in during the volcano room cleanup. And it was a task. Just getting the sand drug back on sleds was...
Oh my gosh.
And I'm not a big, strong person. But I'm like, dang, this bag of sand weighs a lot.
Now, some of that graffiti in the volcano passage is kind of being left there on purpose, per, I think, Bill. Do you know the reasoning behind that?
I don't know if it's just because it's before a certain date. I'm not really sure about that, to be totally honest with you. But I have seen one section, and I think at one point there was a sign up that said, leave this area alone. Yeah. And I think that sign's gone now, but yeah.
So when did you then graduate from spelunker to caver, would you say?
It was around 2006. Like I said, my time frame is completely wonky. It was when I discovered helmets and headlamps.
Yeah.
And I don't have to carry this 40 million pound mag light with me. I'm like, what have I been doing wrong my whole life?
Well, I mean, how much were you doing before then? I mean, how much actual caving were you doing before that point?
Before that point, probably at least one trip a month.
Really? You were doing it without a helmet and without, with no headlamp? Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Just for a few years. I mean, I moved up to Indy for a few years and I didn't cave quite as much then, but yeah, that was right around the time where I discovered helmets are my friend.
Well, yeah. All it takes is one good bump.
And, yes.
Well, so, then, I don't know. What did you do? Did you run into a group of like actual cavers? How did you find the light?
Actually, we did. We ran into a group that looked, I don't even know who they were, but they were very well prepared. On that trip, one of the guys we were with had sat up quickly and just drilled his head. And he was bleeding. And then this group comes by and they're like, yeah, you might want to invest in a helmet, idiots. And I'm like, oh, okay, I think I will. So whoever out there is listening, if you remember telling a group of dingbats, you might want to invest in a helmet around 2006, that was probably...
That was me. So where, do you remember what the cave was? Was it Buckner?
That one was Trapdoor, actually.
Oh, Trapdoor, right on. Okay, yeah. Cool. So then, I don't know, so you get a little more serious about it. Did you then join the BIG right away, or how much time did it take for you to actually join a grotto?
Yeah, so I moved back to Bloomington in 2007 and discovered the BIG, you know, looked him up online, did a little research, found this guy named Dave Everton. Who's that guy? shot him an email because we both worked at IU. And he quickly got back with me, went to the first meeting, and then I was just completely hooked in a different way, better way.
Well, so then what was one of your first like serious trips with a helmet and with all the proper gear, and how far did it take you?
I think my first trip properly prepared was to Sullivan Cave, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, Sullivan or Buckner, because that's where I tended to go the most. But yeah, that I think that was the first where I realized this is a lot of fun. I am meeting some really fantastic people. And then that caving family, what you hear about the caving family, it is very true. And I am a little bit weird, but aren't we all?
Yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a prerequisite.
I found my tribe.
So now, okay, let's talk about Sullivan a little bit. So how far have you been in Sullivan? Sure. Have you done all the big long trips? Been up to the Rise?
I've not been to the Rise.
Ooh, you got to do that.
That's a long, very wet trip.
Well, that's true. That's true. If you don't like water, that's not a good one to do, I guess. But there's not a lot of crawling in the water or anything like that. I mean, there's a couple like bathtubs. They're not too long. And there's a good long swim with a fairly high ceiling. You know, it's a stoop way. It's, you know, you can just kind of kick your feet and lay on the Swago pack. And
oh, it makes a great floaty, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Sure does. Yeah. So you haven't even been like past, up to like the Coliseum, like room zero or room one or anything like that?
Nope. I think, the quarry room and that direction and the spiral room are the furthest I've been. And then the Speed Hollow exit.
Okay. See, I've never done Speed Hollow. I've never even been in the spiral room before. I've got to change that.
Oh, it's a really cool room. Yeah. And finding the hole to get out to the Speed Hollow exit is it. You want to go with somebody that also knows.
Yeah. I've heard as much. I've heard many a story of people who just go with that mission and then they just can't find it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do that one in cold weather for sure.
No, it's not. I don't want to tell people to trespass on this, but it's a long walk back.
Yeah, no, I've wondered about that too. Like, I mean, are you just bushwhacking up hills and over?
Bring your compass with you.
Oh, gosh.
Know your bearing ahead of time and you'll be okay. But yeah, you can hear the road for most of it, if memory serves.
So aside from Indiana and a little bit, you know, in the very early days in Kentucky, I don't know, where else have you gone?
I've done several pits in the Tag region, several just regular horizontal caves in the Tag region. I think my favorite at this moment is Fern Cave.
Ooh.
You know, when somebody says you're going to walk into a crystal room or beautiful helictite filled room, you're not quite prepared. Wow. Until you actually see it for yourself. It was amazing. And you forget that you're so far south that the caves are a little bit warmer. And I really could have used another 2 liter or a liter of water on that trip. But it was beautiful and it was fun. And I think the hardest cave I've gone to would be James Cave in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah, that jungle gym that they got set up down there.
Oh, my gosh. I purposefully didn't ask too much ahead of time because I knew I'd probably talk myself out of going. But it was a lot of fun.
So what do they have going on down there? They've just got the whole thing rigged with ropes and it's just, you know, climbing and then rappelling and then climbing. I mean, I don't know. I have this picture of what they've got going on down there. And one of these days I'm going to get down there and see it for myself.
Yeah. Well, the traverse lines are just amazing. And that's really, for me, that's the spooky bit, because you are dangling over, I don't know, 100, 200 feet, whatever it is. And you're just kind of pulling yourself across this horizontal traverse line and your arms turn to jelly halfway across. And you've got Jeff Belly on the other end, like, come on, you can do it. I'm like, okay. My arms are jelly. I guess I can. I have to. Everybody else is waiting on me. So there's a few spots where you get off the traverse line and you kind of have to finagle around something. And man, it looks rough.
So are there several like options for a trip there, or is it the same trip every time? And maybe you can go a little further one direction, but you got to come back that way. Or is there a circle route? What did you do?
There's a gazillion options, I think, in that cave. It's, I don't know how many, I'm making this up, 5 or 6 levels within a mile square. There's so much to do in that cave. We dropped the vertical entrance. We did a circle, actually. We did climb out. So we dropped the vertical entrance, played around while some people, you know, poked around looking at possible new survey routes. And came back out the same entrance.
Was that with the NCRC people? Is that how you got down there, or was that kind of just a fun trip?
Yeah, it was. There's a group that actually caving in that area and surveys and cleanups and the James Cave group. So it was with them, and most of them are NCRC folks.
Yeah, that's so cool. Well, when I talked to Don Paquette for the podcast. We got to the end of it and he said, we didn't even talk about James Cave. And I'm like, I'm going to have you back for another hour on James Cave.
Oh gosh. They could probably talk 2 hours, 3 hours on James Cave. There's so much there.
Do you know any of the story behind, I don't know, the exploration of that or them finding it or what, you know, how they got to that? Or I don't know. I'm sure I should probably ask them, but I don't know. What do you know about that?
The only thing I know is Jesse James had something to do with it.
Oh, he had something to do with every cave. That's legendary.
I should know, but I don't.
That's all right. So when it comes to NCRC, you've been kind of involved with them as well, right?
Yeah. So I took level 1 several years ago, which was the best worst week of my life. That's how I like to call it.
Right on.
From that point, I really learned to trust my gear. I'm not quite the gearhead that a lot of them are, but it did help in my vertical skills tremendously. And then I help out at some of the orientation to cave rescues, the OCRs. I teach on the side, not really caving related, but a lot of cavers have taken this class. I teach wilderness first aid for solo.
Cool.
Yeah. So a lot of times I'll do that little section in the OCR framework of lessons for the weekend. So I still stay involved as much as I can.
So when it comes to like actual rescues, have you had any experience with actual rescues or anything like that?
Yeah, I've actually been called out on a few and I got rescued myself.
Did you?
Yeah, it was mostly self-rescue until a vehicle met us inside the cave.
Wow.
Yeah. Cumberland Caverns, we were on a quote-unquote wild trip off the beaten path, and a big, huge chunk of mud decided to fall on my head and on my friend Chris Park's head, and the doctor said if I had moved my head 1 inch, I would not be here today.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I consider myself very lucky. Again, knock on wood. I do that a lot.
Or limestone, as it were.
Right. That was actually the wake up moment where I'm like, even though we self-rescued out of that for the most part, that's when I realized that things can go really wrong at a moment's notice in complete freak accident.
Yeah, there was nothing that you did that was your fault at all in that situation.
No. I mean, really, it was nobody's fault. It was just the mud bank decided to crumble at that particular moment.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
So, you know, we do a lot of mock rescues in the trainings that we've done. That's been really helpful. But I've been called out a few times, most notably to a cave in Bedford that one person was reported missing. They were reported 3 days after they went in.
Oh.
And actually, we didn't even really know they were in there or not. This was just a guess by a family member. And then instead of one person, we found two, which they were in there for 3 days. It's like, wow.
What was the story there?
Well, going back to my beginning caving, we didn't have cell phones then, really, but they just went in with a cell phone and a lighter, dropped the cell phone, and then their lighter ran out. And I do remember them say they burnt their fingers trying to keep the lighter lit. And then they just sat down and waited.
How far in were they?
Maybe 1,000 feet or
so. Oh, boy.
And that's a guess. Not terribly far, but far enough to, you know, they couldn't make their way out.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine how terrifying? I mean, it's pretty, I don't want to say stupid. I don't like to blame the victim, but I mean, that's a pretty dumb thing to do. It's kind of like caving 101. You bring enough lights, you bring a helmet, you know, and you know what you're doing.
And if
it's the cave I'm thinking of, it's a pretty well-known cave down there. It's kind of the one that people go down there and do. So it was a good guess on your part going in there finding them. But man, 3 days. I cannot even imagine. Were they like emaciated or?
They were definitely hypothermic. Tennis shoes and capri pants and a t-shirt. Like, good for them for still being with it. I don't know how they feel right now. And I'm guessing they've never been caving after that. But, you know, a lot of it is just education. You know, you grow up taking a lighter into a cave, nothing bad happens, you're going to do it again. And then you're going to go further, and you're going to go further. And then one day something does happen, and you're not fully prepared.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Were you on the crew that discovered them where they were?
No, I wasn't. I was checking out the upper level passage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Oof. I wonder what that was like. I wonder if they even had the energy to yell for the people who came upon him first.
Man. Yeah, I think yelling did happen. I remember hearing that.
I would yell too. Let's go back to Fern Cave. I mean, did you do the big deep pit? Did you do surprise pit there when you went?
Well, it was close, but I again had a panic moment because there's one little crack that you have to kind of step over. And that crack, if you look down, it's 400 feet.
Oh.
my stomach said, nope, not today.
Yeah. Was that part of the plan though?
I brought my vertical gear. Well, we did do a little bit of vertical and the fern side, but on the surprise pit side, I knew I was iffy going into it because that would have been the largest pit I've ever done. And I, at that moment, wasn't super mentally prepared for it. And then when I got to that crack in the floor, I'm like, oh, yep, nope. This isn't going to happen today. But I found a little cubby hole and sat and watched everybody go up and down. So,
well, there you go. There you go. What? Yep. Okay. Have you since done a pit that compares, or what's your deepest pit so far?
You would ask that. The deepest pit, definitely Gory in Indiana would be the deepest. And Tim is looking, he's thinking.
Well, Tim's done Golondrinus before, right?
Oh, yes. Tim's done Ellison's and Golondrinus. He's done, he rappelled down El Cap.
Ooh, boy.
So Bridge Day, I have not done Bridge Day yet.
I'm going to have to talk to Tim one of these days. Is he down? Is he down? Is he there? He's there right there with you.
He's right here. He's still trying to think of what the deepest bit is we've done. But
Gory is cool. I love Gory because, you know, it's not just a pit. It's, you know, you get down there and then you can do a little caving and then you can climb the rope in the back. Did you do
and
all that?
And there's another little thing. Yeah.
Did you go in that little hole with the that's rigged with that old piece of gold line?
Yes, and I think the gold line's been changed out.
That's no fun.
Not quite as scary.
It's been years since I've been down there, but I got to go back. I missed the window this year. It's September 1st when we're recording this, and yesterday was the last day, I guess, technically, that we could have gone and done it, huh?
Yep, it was. Actually, Tim went 2 days ago, two days ago.
Ah.
He and some friends went, And I, unfortunately, we have a very old dog that can't be left alone. So he went with that group and I'll catch it in May when it starts up again.
So what's on your list? Like, what do you want to do? What have you not done? And you can say either in Indiana or elsewhere, what's still left to do?
I would like to do more in Fern Cave.
Okay.
I know there's several drops in there. We only did, I think, one like 40-foot nuisance drop to get some of the pretties. But I would like to do more of that cave. I read there was a book written about Fern Cave by one of the gals that kind of came along later and did some surveying. She wasn't part of the initial group, but
Jennifer Pinkley. I've talked to her.
Yes. Oh, you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I read that book, and actually, after reading that, I'm like, man, I couldn't cross that stupid crack in the floor. And it was a lot different back then. Like they had to, it was much worse back then. They kind of chiseled a little walk, or not walkway, but a little crawlway to make it safer. But they were doing all that without ropes on. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. So is that is that like the rig point? Is that where you go down, or is that just a crack where you can see through?
That's a crack where you can see through. Okay. Then once you cross that over, then you walk around. And basically what you're doing is you're standing on a humongous ceiling boulder that fell and got wedged. So the pit is much taller, but where you rig to is a rock that fell from above that got wedged in the pit. And you're on top of that.
Oh, good.
It's amazing. Like when you're in there, if you go in one way, you can actually look out and see that rock versus going the other way to get to that rig point. And it's really cool to see.
Oh, man. Well, what about Indiana? Is there anywhere in Indiana that you just haven't done yet? I mean, maybe for one reason or another, but because there's a lot of wet stuff in Indiana. But
there is.
Are there like caves in Indiana that you just haven't done yet that are kind of still on your list?
Yes, actually, there's one private owned cave that the landowner has not given permission. And years ago, people used to go all the time, but she now is of an age where I think it scares her. So she has not given permission. I try not to trespass. But I really, really, really want to go to this one cave and somewhere south of me.
I'll get the name when I stop recording because I'm really intrigued. I think I might know what you're talking about, but yeah, there's a few caves in Indiana that have kind of, I don't know, the status has changed even just in the last 5 years.
Yeah. Gosh, we used to go to Wells Cave all the time. And that lady passed away and it transferred ownership a couple times. And I've spent many, many a minute trying to get a hold of the new owner, because my goal is to see if the new owner, if I could pay for 5 acres to connect to the road and own it. I mean, that is my goal in life. I really, really like that cave a lot. I don't see them turning it into a housing addition or anything. But you know, that possibility exists, but I really would love to save that one.
What are some of your favorite like challenge passages? You mentioned Gurgle Spring and some of the tight stuff that you like to do, the connection, the old school connection to the Mountain Room and Sullivan. What are some of those?
I don't know how hard. I mean, they're not terribly hard, but I really like the merry-go-round in Sullivan.
Just for like route finding, I've been down there, but is there like tight stuff there?
There is. So if you go to the merry-go-round, there is a hole in the floor. If you can get down in there, then there's kind of a tight crawl. I've actually never made it to the point where it would quote unquote end. I mean, it's on the map. Somebody's been there. Probably Sam. We could ask him. somebody's been down there, but I just want to see the end of it. And it gets pretty tight. It gets pretty tight. But a lot of times if I go, I'm like, oh man, maybe I'm the smallest one in this group. I need somebody smaller to come and get me in case I get stuck. But yeah, that's one.
There's some fun stuff in Wayne too.
There is some fun. Actually, I want to do this 2021. Well, 2020 is kind of a bust, but 2021 is my goal to see more of Wayne Cave.
Yeah. All right. So what's on that list? What are your goals?
The whole thing.
You want to get up to Camp 4,
Camp 4,
the Gypsum Passage and all that?
Yep.
Yeah. It's a long trip.
It is a long trip. And I don't have to do it in one day. But, you know, I'll do what I can. And, you know, this old body, after that caving accident, I have to say I'm not quite back to what I was.
Really?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
Oh, gosh. Well, that was in like 2015, 2014. Wow. It's been a while.
Because I've talked to Chris Parks, and I mean, you know, we only talked for an hour, but mm-hmm. he didn't mention that. At least as far as I remember, he didn't mention the Cumberland Caverns incident.
Oh, well, sorry, Chris. I just outed you. maybe he's trying to forget it. I don't know.
Or maybe the incident itself made him forget it. I don't know. It sounds like
he got hit on the noggin too. So it wasn't great. And it was funny. Oh, I'll tell you this. So we went down to a grotto meeting in Tennessee. I can't remember which grotto it was off the top of my head now. But anyway, we went with Marion Smith and Sharon Jones.
Nice.
And we were caving with them, and there just happened to be a grotto meeting, so we tagged along. And we're sitting there talking, and Cumberland Caverns was brought up. And then this guy says, yeah, I'll never forget when this girl from Indiana came in and got hit in the head. We were just waiting on her to sue us.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
I just looked up. I'm like, that was me.
Gosh, really?
They They could not believe it. Was the funniest moment. They all, I mean, the word on the street was, oh, we're going to get sued. We're going to get sued. I'm like, they didn't set it up to happen. Stuff happens.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it was that bad? I mean, it was that bad for that they thought it was like you could sue over that?
Yeah, I was in the hospital.
Oh, my word. Oh, boy. So how long did it take for you to get back underground after that?
The next day.
Of course.
I'm like, if I don't. So we went to another cave that next day that was, it was all walking. And I'm like, if I don't get back underground now, I might be, I don't want the fear to take hold. So yeah, we went the next day.
So you,
and I had to take it easy though. I had some trouble walking.
Oh man. So you're like, I mean, you're involved. You're not a project caver, but you co-lead the BIG. You're one of the directors of the Indiana Karst Conservancy. And so more than 1,000 cavers listen to this every month, or at least download it. I mean, I see the metrics. So you're in kind of a unique position right now to kind of share maybe a message about conservation. When you get the chance to kind of be on a soapbox, what do you like to say?
So I do take the soapbox when I take youth groups caving, because I'll find old leaking batteries and I'll, pull it out and point to it and say, hey guys, you know how long this has been here? I give them the conservation lecture. If we come across graffiti, especially when it's, foul language or worse, I've seen worse in a cave, I do jump up in my soapbox and just say, treat this area with respect. The water you're crawling through right now, most likely someone that has a well downstream is drinking this. So treat it with respect. Don't be a jerk. Caves are awesome. They are so much fun, but accidents do happen. So I really try to make sure they just respect the area they're in and pay attention to where they're at. And, good things will come out of it later.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're at an hour. Is there anything else you wanted to share?
I really love taking new cavers caving and just seeing that holy crap moment on their face when they realize what's underneath their feet, like what's under their house, what are they driving over the top of? Just seeing that is amazing.
And you're in kind of a unique position to do that, because I talk to a lot of project cavers and, usually they're one to kind of stick with their group and they don't want anyone dragging them behind. But you're not really a project caver. You're one of those people who wants to introduce people to it. And I feel like I'm kind of the same way. I like to take new people. It doesn't always go well. They don't always like it. But when you get the one person who's like, yeah, I think I might do this again. I don't know. You get that feeling.
Oh, it's like cave crack or something. I don't know. It's awesome. I've only had, in all the trips I've ever led, I think one person has backed out. No, I take that back. Two people have backed out on, more than 100 trips in the last 13 or so years. And I feel like that's pretty good odds. I don't know how other people do with new cavers, but I feel happy about that.
I'd say that's a pretty good record.
Talk them down off that ledge. Literally, metaphorically.
Well, Danielle Green, thank you so much for your time. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Oh, Danielle, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening to this podcast. It is so special to connect with cavers. I love getting emails from cavers about this podcast, Facebook messages. I've been getting a lot of them lately, recommendations for guests. And I'm trying to get to as many of them as I can. Next month, this was another suggestion, I believe, from Facebook Messenger, Chrissy Richards. Chrissy Richards, she currently lives in Hawaii, but she's a cave diver. She's also a caver, but she's done some cave diving. Oh my gosh. I mean, can you imagine? I just can't imagine. Maybe you've done it before. I have not, probably will not. But I have the utmost respect for those folks. Chrissy Richards is one of the best, and I get to talk to her next month. And I cannot wait for you to hear it. And again, the kickoff episode for 2021, the send-off for 2020, the screw you to 2020 is going to be such a big guest. I'm hyping it up now, and you won't be disappointed. I can't wait for you to hear it. I did the interview last week. It's going to be great. Support this podcast by supporting our sponsors, Elspelio. Go to elspelio.com and save $20 on any regularly priced headlamp or any regularly priced order over $300 or more. Elspelio.com, promo code podcast to get that savings. Oh, and, support our sponsors past and present. Swago gear.com. Also, Organic Robot on Etsy. He's got his own shop in Greenfield, Indiana now. Can you believe it? Screen printer and graphic designer. He's got all these great caving shirts. Go to the Organic Robot Etsy store and order some there. Am I forgetting anything? Oh, yeah. Donate to the IKC at ikc.caves.org. The link is in the description to give to the Shawnee Karst Preserve expansion, which is not quite paid for yet. Is that everything? I think that's everything. Happy caving. Safe caving. Until next time, kill nothing but time.